2. "Are you certain you're all right, my lord?" Wax asked, helping Lord Drapin, Constable General of the 6th Octant, down the steps toward his carriage. Water trickled beside them in little streams, joining a small river in the gutters.
"Ruined my best pistol, you realize," Drapin said. "I'll have to send the thing to be cleaned and oiled."
"Bill me the expense, my lord," Wax said, ignoring the fact that a good pistol would hardly be ruined by a little, or, well, a lot of water. Wax turned the aging gentleman over to his coachman, sharing a resigned look, before turning and climbing back up the steps into the church. The carpet squished when he stepped on it, or maybe that was his shoes. He passed the priest, bickering with the Arakel insurance assessor, come to do an initial report for when the church demanded payment on their policy, and entered the main dome. The one open section of glass still swung on its hinges up above, and the tipped water tower, its legs on the other side had kept it from crashing down completely, still blocked out much of the sky. He passed overturned benches, discarded marewill petals, and general refuse. Water dripped, the room's only sound other than the echoing voice of the priest. Wax squished his way up to the dais. Steris sat on its edge, wet dress plastered to her body, strands of hair that had escaped from her wedding braids sticking to the sides of her face. She sat with arms crossed on her knees, staring at the floor. Wax sat down next to her. "So, next time a flood is dumped on our heads, I'll try to remember that jumping upward is a bad idea." He pulled his handkerchief from his pocket and squeezed it out.
"You tried to get us backward, too. It merely wasn't fast enough, Lord Waxillium."
He grunted.
"Looks like simple structural failure. If it was instead some kind of assassination attempt, well, it was an incompetent one. There wasn't enough water in there to be truly dangerous. The worst injury was to Lord Stemming, who fell and knocked his head when scrambling off his seat."
"No more than an accident, then," Steris said.
She flopped backward onto the dais, the carpet letting out a soft squish.
"I'm sorry."
"It's not your fault," she sighed. "Do you ever wonder if perhaps the Cosmere is out to overwhelm you, Lord Waxillium?"
"The Cosmere? You mean Harmony?"
"No, not him," Steris said. "Just cosmic chance rolling the dice any time I pass and always hitting all ones. There seems to be a poetry to it all."
She closed her eyes.
"Of course the wedding would fall apart. Several tons of water falling through the roof? Why wouldn't I have seen that? It was so utterly outlandish, it had to happen. At least the priest didn't get murdered this time."
"Steris," Wax said, resting a hand on her arm, "we'll fix this. It will be all right."
She opened her eyes, looking toward him.
"Thank you, Lord Waxillium."
"For what, exactly?" he asked.
"For being nice. For being willing to subject yourself to, well, me. I understand that it is not a pleasant concept."
"Steris?"
"Do not think me self-deprecating, Lord Waxillium,"
she said, sitting up and taking a deep breath.
"And please do not assume I'm being morose. I am what I am, and I accept it. But I am under no illusions as to how my company is regarded. Thank you for not making me feel as others have."
He hesitated. How did one respond to something like that?
"It's not as you say, Steris. I think you're delightful."
"And the fact that you were gritting your teeth as the ceremony started, hands gripping as tightly as a man dangling for his life from the side of a bridge?"
"I...
Are you saddened at the fact that our wedding is delayed? Can you truly say it? And be honest as a lawman, Lord Waxillium."
"Damn."
He floundered. He knew a few simple words could diffuse or sidestep the question, but he couldn't find them, despite searching for what was an awkwardly long time, until saying anything would have sounded condescending.
"Perhaps," he said, smiling, "I'll just have to try something to relax me next time we attempt this."
"I doubt going to the ceremony drunk would be productive."
"I didn't say I'd drink.
Perhaps some terrace meditation beforehand. She eyed him.
You're still willing to move forward?
Of course, as long as it didn't have to be today. I assume you have a backup dress?
Two,
she admitted, letting him help her to her feet.
And I did reserve another date for a wedding 2 months from now. Different church, in case this one exploded.
He grunted. You sound like Wayne.
Well, things do tend to explode around you, Lord Waxillium.
She looked up at the dome.
Considering that, getting drenched must be rather novel.
Marcy trailed around the outside of the flooded church, hands clasped behind her back, notebook a familiar weight in her jacket pocket. A few constables, all corporals, stood about looking as if they were in charge. That sort of thing was important in a crisis. Statistics showed that if a uniformed authority figure was nearby, people were less likely to panic. Of course, there was a smaller percentage who were more likely to panic if an authority figure was nearby. Because people were people, and if there was one thing you could count on, it was that some of them would be weird. Or rather, that all of them would be weird when circumstances happened to align with their own individual brand of insanity. That said, today she hunted a very special kind of insane. She'd tried the nearby pubs first, but that was too obvious. Next, she checked the gutters, one soup kitchen, and, against her better judgment, a purveyor of novelties. No luck, though her backside did get 3 separate compliments, so there was that. Finally, running out of ideas, she went to check if he'd decided to steal the forks from the wedding breakfast. There, in a dining hall across the street from the church, she found Wayne in the kitchens wearing a white jacket and a chef's hat. He was scolding several assistant cooks as they furiously decorated tarts with fruit glaze. Marcy leaned against the doorway and watched, tapping her notebook with her pencil. Wayne sounded utterly unlike himself, instead using a sharp nasal voice with an accent she couldn't quite place. Easterner, perhaps? Some of the outer cities there had thick accents. The assistant cooks didn't question him. They jumped at what he said, bearing his condemnation as he tasted a chilled soup and swore at their incompetence. If he noticed Marcy, he didn't show it, instead wiping his hands on a cloth and demanding to see the produce the delivery boys had brought that morning. Eventually, Marcy strolled into the kitchen, dodging a short assistant chef bearing a pot almost as big as she was, and stepped up to Wayne.
"I've seen crisper lettuce in the garbage heap,"
he was saying to a cringing delivery boy.
"And you call these grapes? They are so overripe, they're practically fermenting. And, oh, hello, Marcy."
He said the last line in his normal, jovial voice. The delivery boy scrambled away.
"What are you doing?" Marcy asked.
"Making soup," Wayne said, holding up a wooden spoon to show her. Nearby, several of the assistant cooks stopped in place, looking at him with shocked expressions.
"Out with you!"
he said to them in the chef's voice.
"I must have time to prepare! Shoo! Shoo! Go!"
They scampered away, leaving him grinning.
"You do realize the wedding breakfast is cancelled," Marcy said, leaning back against a table.
"Sure do."
"So why?"
She trailed off as he stuffed an entire tart in his mouth and grinned.
"I'll make sure they didn't welch on their promise and not make anything to eat,"
he said around chewing, crumbs cascading from his lips.
"We paid for this stuff. Well, Wax did. Besides, wedding being cancelled is no reason not to celebrate, right?"
"Depends on what you're celebrating," Marcy said, flipping open her notebook. "Bolts securing the water tower in place were definitely loosened. Road below was conspicuously empty. Some ruffians, from another octant entirely, I might add, having stopped traffic by starting a fist fight in the middle of the rusting street."
Wayne grunted, searching in a cupboard.
"Hate that little notebook of yours sometimes,"
Marcy groaned, closing her eyes.
"Someone could have been hurt, Wayne."
"Now, that ain't right at all. Someone was hurt. That fat fellow what has no hair."
She massaged her temples.
You realize I'm a constable now, Wayne? I can't turn a blind eye toward wanton property damage.
Aw, it's not so bad, Wayne said, still rummaging. Wax'll pay for it.
And if someone had been hurt? Seriously, I mean?
Wayne kept searching. The lads got a little carried away. See that the church is flooded, I told them. Meant for the priest to open the place in the morning and find his plumbing had gotten a little case of the being all busted up and leaking all over the rusting place. But the lads, they got a little excited is all. The lads? Just some friends. Saboteurs? Nah, Wayne said. You think they could pronounce that?
Wayne.
I slapped him around already, Marcy, Wayne said. Promise I did.
He's going to figure it out, Marcy said. What will you do then?
Nah, you're wrong, Wayne said, finally coming out of the cupboard with a large glass jug. Wax has a blind spot for things like this. In the back of his noggin, he'll be relieved that I stopped the wedding. He'll figure it was me, deep in his subcontinence, and will pay for the damages, no matter what the assessor says. And he won't say anything. Won't even investigate. Watch.
I don't know.
Wayne hopped up onto the kitchen counter, then patted the spot beside him. She regarded him for a moment, then sighed and settled onto the counter there. He offered her the jug.
That's cooking sherry, Wayne.
Yeah, he said. Pubs don't serve anything this hour but beer. A fellow has to get creative.
I'm sure we could find some wine around.
He took a swig.
Never mind, Marcy said.
He lowered the jug and pulled off his chef's hat, tossing it onto the counter. What are you so uptight for today, anyway? I figured you'd be whooping for joy and running around the street picking flowers and stuff. He's not marrying her. Not yet, anyway. You still got a chance.
I don't want a chance, Wayne. He's made his decision.
Now, what kind of talk is that? He demanded. You've given up? Is that how the Ascendant Warrior was? Huh?
No, in fact, Marcy said. She walked up to the man she wanted, slapped the book out of his hand, and kissed him.
See? There's how it is.
Though the Ascendant Warrior also went on and murdered the woman Elland was planning to marry.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Gruesome, Wayne said in an approving tone, then took another swig of sherry.
That's not the half of it, Marcy said, leaning back on the counter, hands behind her. You want gruesome? She also supposedly ripped out the Lord Ruler's insides. I've seen it depicted in several illuminated manuscripts.
Kind of graphic for a religious-type story.
Actually, they're all like that. I think they have to put in lots of exciting bits to make people read the rest.
Huh.
He seemed disbelieving. Wayne, haven't you ever read any religious texts?
Sure I have.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of things I read had religious texts in them. Damn, hell, flatulent arse-lick and git.
She gave him a flat stare.
That last one is in the Testimony of Hammond. Promise. At least all the letters are.
Another swig. Wayne could outdrink anyone she knew. Of course, that was mostly because he could tap his metal mind, heal himself, and burn away the alcohol's effects in an eye blink. Then start over.
Here now, he continued. That's what you've got to do. Be like the Lady Mistborn. Get your murdering on, see? Don't back down. He should be yours, and you got to let people know.
My murdering on?
Sure.
Against my sister.
You could be polite about it, Wayne said. Like give her the first stab or whatnot.
No, thank you.
It doesn't have to be real murder and Marcy, Wayne said, hopping off the counter. It can be figurative and all. But you should fight. Don't let him marry her.
Marcy leaned her head back, looking up at the set of ladles swinging above the counter. I'm not the Ascendant Warrior, Wayne, she said. And I don't particularly care to be. I don't want someone I have to convince, someone I have to rope into submission. That sort of thing is for the courtroom, not the bedroom.
Now, see, I think some people would say,
Careful.
That's a right enlightened way to think of things. He took a swig of sherry.
I'm not some tortured, abandoned creature, Wayne, Marcy said, finding herself smiling at her distorted reflection in a ladle. I'm not sitting around pining and dreaming for someone else to decide if I should be happy. There's nothing there. Whether that's due to actual lack of affection on his part, or more to stubbornness, I don't care. I've moved on.
She looked down, meeting Wayne's eyes. He cocked his head.
Huh. You're serious, aren't you?
Damn right. Moved on, he said.
Rusted nuts! You can do that?
Certainly.
Huh. You think I should, you know, Renette?
Wayne, if ever someone should have taken a hint, it was you. Yes. Move on. Really.
Oh, I took the hint, he said, taking a swig of sherry. Just can't remember which jacket I left it in.
He looked down at the jug.
You sure?
She has a girlfriend, Wayne.
It's only a phase, he mumbled. One what lasted 15 years.
He set the jug down, then sighed and reached into the cupboard from before, taking out a bottle of wine.
Oh, for preservation's sake, Marcy said. That was in there all along?
Tastes better if you drink something what tastes like dishwater first, Wayne said,
then pulled the cork out with his teeth, which was kind of impressive, she had to admit. He poured her a cup, then one for himself.
To moving on? He asked.
Sure. To moving on.
She raised her cup and saw reflected in the wine someone standing behind her. She gasped, spinning, reaching for her purse. Wayne just raised his cup to the newcomer, who rounded the counter with a slow step. It was the man in the brown suit and bow tie. No, not the man. The Condra.
If you're here to persuade me to persuade him, Wayne said, you should know that he doesn't ever listen to me unless he's pretty drunk at the time.
He downed the wine.
It's probably why he's lived so long.
Actually, the Condra said, I'm not here for you.
He turned to Marcy, then tipped his head.
My first choice for this endeavor has rejected my request. I hope you don't take offense at being my second.
Marcy found her heart thumping quickly.
What do you want?
The Condra smiled broadly.
Tell me, Miss Combs, what do you know about the nature of investiture and identity?
3. Wax, at least, had a change of clothing that wasn't wet, the suit he had worn on the raid. So he was pleasantly dry as his carriage pulled up to Ladrian Mansion. Steris had returned to her father's house to recover. Wax put aside his broadsheet and waited for Cobb, the new coachman, to hop down and yank open the carriage door. There was a frantic eagerness to the little man's motions, as if he knew that Wax only used a coach for propriety's sake. Leaping home on lines of steel would have been far faster, but just as a lord couldn't walk everywhere, steel pushing around town too much in the daytime when not chasing criminals made members of his house uncomfortable. It simply wasn't what a house lord did. Wax nodded to Cobb and handed him the broadsheet. Cobb grinned. He loved the things.
Take the rest of the day off, Wax told him. I know you were looking forward to the wedding festivities.
Cobb's grin widened, then he bobbed his head and climbed back onto the coach to see it and the horses cared for before leaving. He'd likely spend the day at the races. Wax sighed, climbing the steps to the mansion. It was one of the finest in the city. Luxurious, with carved stonework and deep hardwood with tasteful marble accents. That didn't stop it from being a prison. It was just a very nice one. Wax didn't enter. Instead, he stood on the steps for a while before turning around and sitting on them. Closing his eyes, he let it all settle on him. He was good at hiding his scars. He'd been shot almost a dozen times now, a few of those wounds quite bad. Out in the roughs, he'd learned to pick himself up and keep on going no matter what happened. At the same time, it felt like things back then had been simple. Not always easy, but simple. And some scars continued to ache.
seemed to get worse with time. He rose with a groan, legs stiff, and continued up the steps. Nobody opened the door for him or took his coat as he entered. He maintained a small staff in the house, but only what he considered necessary. Too many servants, and they'd hover and worry when he did anything on his own. It was as if the idea of him being capable drove them into feeling vestigial. Wax frowned, then slipped vindication from his hip holster and raised her beside his head. He couldn't say precisely what had set him off. Footsteps up above when he'd given the housekeepers the day off. A cup on a side table with a bit of wine in the bottom. He flicked a little vial from his belt and downed the contents. Steel flakes suspended in whiskey. The metal burned a familiar warmth inside of him, radiating from his stomach, and blue lines sprang into existence around him. They moved with him as he crept forward, as if he were tied with 1,000 tiny threads. He leaped and pushed on the inlays in the marble floor, soaring up alongside the stairs to the second-story viewing balcony above the grand entryway. He slipped easily over the banister, landing with gun at the ready. The door to his study quivered, then opened. Wax tiptoed forward.
"Just a moment, I..."
The man in the light brown suit froze as he found Wax's gun pressed against his temple.
"You," Wax said. "I'm quite fond of this skull," the conjurer remarked. "It's 6th century antiverdant, the head of a metal merchant from Urto, whose grave was shifted and protected as a side effect of Harmony's rebuilding. An antique, if you will. If you make a hole in it, I'll be rather put out."
"I told you I wasn't interested," Wax growled.
"Yes, I took that to heart, Lord Ladrian."
"Then why are you here?"
"Because I was invited," the conjurer said.
He reached up and grasped the barrel of Wax's gun between two fingers, then pushed it gently to the side.
"We needed a place to converse. Your associate suggested it, as, I'm told, the servants are away."
"My associate?"
At that point he heard laughter from ahead.
"Wayne."
He eyed the conjurer, then sighed and slipped his gun into its holster.
"Which one are you? Tensoon, is that you?"
"Me?"
the conjurer asked, laughing.
"Tensoon? What? Do you hear me panting?"
He chuckled, gesturing for Wax to enter his own study as if he were doing Wax some grand courtesy.
"I am Vandel, of the 6th. Pleased to meet you, Lord Ladrian. If you must shoot me, please do it in the left leg, as I've no particular fondness for those bones."
"I'm not going to shoot you," Wax said, shoving past the conjurer and entering the room. The blinds had been drawn, and the thick curtains left to droop down, plunging the room into almost complete darkness, save for two small new electric lamps. Why the closed curtains? Was the conjurer that concerned about being seen? Wayne lounged in Wax's easy chair, feet up on the cocktail table, helping himself to a bowl of walnuts. A woman stretched out in a similar posture in the companion chair, wearing tight trousers and a loose blouse, eyes closed as she leaned back in the chair, hands behind her head. She wore a different body from last time Wax had seen her, but the posture, and the height, gave him good clues that this was Milan. Marisi was inspecting some odd equipment set up on a pedestal at the back of the room. It was a box with small lenses on the front. She stood up straight as soon as she saw him and, being Marisi, blushed deeply.
"Sorry about this," she said. "We were going to go to my flat to talk, but Wayne insisted."
"Needed some nuts,"
Wayne said around a mouthful of walnuts.
"When you invited me to stay here, you did say to make myself at home, mate."
"I'm still unclear as to why you needed a place to talk," Wax said. "I said I wasn't going to help."
"Quite so," Vandel said from the doorway. "As you were unavailable, of necessity, I turned to other options. Lady Combs has been so kind as to listen to my proposition."
"Marisi?" Wax asked.
"You went to Marisi?"
"What?"
Vandel asked.
"That's surprising to you? She was instrumental in the defeat of Miles 100 Lives, not to mention her help during the riots Pa'am instigated."
Wax looked at the conjurer. "You're trying to get to me through another route, aren't you?"
"Look who's full of himself,"
Milan said from her chair.
"He's always full of himself," Wayne said, cracking a walnut. "Mostly on account of him eating his own fingernails. I seen him do it."
"Is it so ridiculous," Marcy said, "that they'd actually want my help?"
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way," Wax said, turning to her.
"Then what way did you mean it?"
Wax sighed. "I don't know, Marcy. It's been a long day. I got shot at, got a water tower dumped in my head, and had my wedding fall apart. Now Wayne is dropping broken walnut shells all over my chair. Honestly, I think I just need a drink."
He walked around the bar at the back of the room. Marcy eyed him, and as he passed, she muttered, "Will you get me one, too? Because this is all making me go a little crazy."
He smiled, digging out some single malt whiskey, pouring for himself and for Marcy. Vendel disappeared out the door, but returned a few minutes later with some piece of equipment that he hooked to the strange device. He ran a wire from the device to one of the wall lamps, pulling out the bulb and screwing in the end of the wire instead. Leaving would feel childish, so Wax leaned against the wall and sipped his whiskey, saying nothing as Vendel turned on his machine. An image appeared on the wall. Wax froze. It was a picture, similar to an Evanotype, only on the wall and quite large. It displayed the Field of Rebirth in the center of Ellendale, where the tombs of Vin and Elend Venture would be found. He'd never seen anything like that image. It seemed to have been created entirely by light. Marcy gasped. Wayne threw a walnut at it.
"What?"
he said as the others glared at him.
"Wanted to see if it was real."
He hesitated, then threw another walnut. The nut made a shadow on the image where it moved between the device and the wall. So it was light.
"Image projector," Vendel said. "They call it an evanoscope. By next year, these will be commonplace, I should think."
He paused.
"Harmony implies that if we find this wondrous, it will really burn our metals when the images start moving."
"Moving?" Wax said, stepping forward. "How would they do that?"
"We don't know," Milan said with a grimace. "He accidentally let it slip, but won't say anything more."
"How does God," Marcy asked, still staring at the image, "accidentally let something slip?" "As I said," Vendel said, "he has been distracted lately. We've tried to tease out more regarding moving images, but so far, no luck. He's often like this. Says it's vital that we discover things on our own."
"Like a chick breaking out of its shell," Milan said. "He says that if we don't struggle and learn on our own, we won't be strong enough to survive what is coming."
She left the words hanging in the room, and Wax shared a look with Marcy.
"Well," Marcy said slowly, "that's ominous. Has he said anything more about Trell?"
Wax folded his arms. Trell. It was a god from the old records, long before the Catasandra. Indeed, long before the Lord Ruler. Harmony had memorized this religion, with many others, during his days as a mortal. Marcy had an obsession with the god, and one that was not unwarranted. Wax wasn't certain whether her claim was true or not, that the worship of Trell was involved in what had happened to Lessie, but the spikes they'd discovered, they didn't seem to have been made of any metal known to man. The Chondra had confiscated those. Wax had been so deep in his sorrows that by the time he'd started to recover, they'd already been taken.
"No," Vendel said, "and I have no update on the spikes, if that's what you're wondering, but this task I have for you, Miss Combs, might provide insight. Suffice it to say, we're worried about the possible intrusion of another god upon this domain."
"Hey,"
Milan said,
"what's a girl gotta do to get some of that whiskey?"
"Sister," Vendel said, twisting something on his machine, making the image brighter, "you are a representative of Harmony and his enlightenment."
"Yup,"
Milan said,
"and I'm a tragically sober one."
Wax brought her a glass, and she grinned at him in thanks.
"Chivalry,"
she said, raising it.
"Manipulation," Vendel said. "Miss Combs, I spoke to you earlier of investiture and identity. I promised you an explanation. Here."
He flipped something on his machine, changing the image on the wall to a list of ferrochemical metals, their attributes, and their natures. It wasn't the pretty artistic rendition that Wax often saw in popular lore. It was far less fancy, but much more detailed.
"The basic physical abilities of ferrochemy are well understood," Vendel said, walking forward and using a long reed to point at a section of the projected chart. "Terrace tradition and heritage has explored them for at least 1,500 years. Harmony left detailed explanations in the words of founding. Likewise, the abilities in the so-called mental quadrant of the chart have been outlined and discussed, tested and defined. Our understanding doesn't reach as far here. We don't know why memories stored in a metal mind degrade the way they do when removed, or why tapping mental speed tends to make one hungry, of all things. But still, we have a great deal of experience in this area."
He paused and circled his pointer around a group of metals and abilities at the bottom. Fortune, investiture, identity, and connection. Wax leaned forward. They'd spoken of these during his year living in the village, but only as part of the catechisms of ferrochemy and terrace belief. None of these specified what the powers actually did. They were considered beyond understanding, like God or time.
"Chromium," Vendel said. "Nicrosil, aluminum, duralumin. These aren't metals that most ancients knew. Only in recent times have modern metallurgical processes allowed them to become commonplace."
"Commonplace," Wayne said. "With a single aluminum bullet, mate, I could buy you an outfit that don't look so stupid, and have money left over for a nice hat or two."
"Be that as it may," Vendel said, "compared to the amount of aluminum in the world before the Catasandra, the metal is now common. Bauxite refining, modern chemical processes, these have given us access to metals on a level that was never before possible. Why, the last obligator's autobiography explains that early aluminum was harvested from the inside of the ash mounts."
Wax stepped forward along the cone of light emanating from the machine. "So what do they do?"
"Research is ongoing," Vendel said. "Fairings with these abilities are very, very rare, and it is only in the last few decades that we've had access to enough of these metals to begin experimenting. Rebuilding society has been a wearisome process."
"You were alive before," Marcy said, "in the days of the Ascendant Warrior."
Vendel turned, raising his eyebrows.
"Indeed, though I never met her. Only Tansun did."
"What was life like?" Marcy asked.
"Hard," Vendel said. "It was hard."
"There are holes in our memories," Milan added softly, "from when our spikes were removed. It took a piece out of us. There are things we'll never get back."
Wax took a drink. There was a weight that came from speaking to the Chondra, in realizing that most of them had already been alive for hundreds of years when the world of ash had ended. These were ancient beings. Perhaps Wax should not be surprised by their presumption. To them, he, indeed everyone else alive, was little more than a child.
"Identity,"
Vendel said, slapping his reed against the wall, casting a shadow on the image.
"Lord Ladrian, could another ferrochemist use your metal mines?"
"Of course not," Wax said. "Everyone knows that."
"Why?"
"Well, because. They're mine." Ferrochemy was simple, elegant. Fill your metal mind with an attribute for an hour, like Wax's weight or Wayne's health and healing, and you could draw out an hour's worth of that attribute later on. Alternatively, you could draw out a burst of power that was extremely intense but lasted only a moment.
"The raw power of both allomancy and ferrochemy," Vendel said, "is something we call investiture. This is very important, as in ferrochemy, an individual's investiture is keyed specifically to them, to what we call identity."
"You've made me curious," Wax said, looking at the wall as Vendel leisurely walked back to his machine. "How does it know? My metal mines, do they recognize me?"
"After a fashion," Vendel said, changing the image to one of a ferrochemist tapping strength.
The woman's muscles had grown to several times their normal size as she lifted a horse above her head.
each man or woman as a spiritual aspect, a piece of themselves that exists in another realm entirely. You might call it your soul. Your investiture is keyed to your soul. Indeed, it might be a part of your soul, much as your blood is a part of your body.
So if a person could store their identity, Maracy said, as Waxillium does with his weight...
They'd be without it for a time, Vendel said. A blank slate, so to speak.
So they could use anyone's metal mind? Maracy asked.
Possibly, Vendel said.
He cycled through pictures of several more ferrochemists using their abilities before coming to rest on an image of a set of bracers. Simple metal bands, like wide bracelets, meant to be worn on the upper arms beneath clothing. It was impossible to tell the type of metal without color, but they had ancient terrace markings engraved on them.
Some have been experimenting with your idea, Vendel said, and early results are promising. However, having a ferrochemist who can use anyone's metal minds is intriguing, but not particularly life-changing. Our society is strewn with individuals who have extraordinary abilities. This would simply be one more variety. No. What interests me is the opposite, Miss Combs. What if a ferrochemist were to divest himself of all identity, then fill another metal mind with an attribute, say, strength? What would it do?
Create an unkeyed metal mind? Maracy asked. One that another ferrochemist could access?
Possibly, Vendel said. Or is there another possibility? Most people living right now have at least some ferrochemist blood in them. Could it be that such a metal mind as I described, one that is keyed to no single individual, might be usable by anyone?
Understanding settled on Wax like a slowly burned metal. From the chair beside the image device, Wayne whistled slowly.
Anyone could be a ferrochemist, Wax said.
Vendel nodded.
Investiture. The innate ability to burn metals or tap metal mines is also one of the things ferrochemy can store. Lord Waxillium, these are arts we are only beginning to comprehend, but the secrets they contain could change the world. In the ancient days, the last emperor discovered a metal that transformed him into a mistborn. A metal anyone could burn, it is said. This whispers of a hidden possibility, something lesser but still incredible. What if one could somehow manipulate identity and investiture to create a set of bracers which imparted ferrochemical or allomantic ability upon the person wearing them? One could make any person a mistborn or a ferrochemist, or both at once.
The room fell silent. A walnut bounced off Vendel's head. He immediately turned to glare at Wayne.
Sorry, Wayne said. Just had trouble believing someone could be so melodramatic, so I figured you might not be real. Had a check, you know.
Vendel rubbed his forehead, breathing out sharply in annoyance.
This is all fascinating, Wax admitted, but unfortunately it's also impossible.
And why is that? Vendel asked.
You don't even know how or if this would work, Wax said, waving toward the screen. And even if you could figure it out, you'd need a full ferrochemist, someone with at least two ferrochemical powers, as they'd need to be able to store their identity in a metal mind along with another ferrochemical attribute.
Rust, to do what you proposed a moment ago and create Allomancers too, you'd basically need someone who was already both Mistborn and full ferrochemist.
This is true, Vendel said.
And how long has it been since a full ferrochemist was born?
A very, very long time, Vendel said. But being born a ferrochemist isn't the only way to make this happen.
Wax hesitated, then shared a look with Maracy. She nodded, and he strode across the room to pull back the wooden panel hiding his wall safe. He did the combination and removed the book that Iron Eyes had sent him. He turned, raising it.
Hemallergy? Harmony hates it.
I've read what the Lord Mistborn had to say on the topic.
Yes, Vendel said. Hemallergy is problematic.
In part because we wouldn't exist without it, Milan said. That's not a particularly fun thing to know, that people had to be murdered in order to bring you to sapience.
Creating new spikes is a horrid practice, Vendel agreed. We have no intentions of doing such a thing to experiment with identity. Instead, we're waiting. A full ferrochemist is bound to be born among mankind eventually, particularly with the Terrace elite working so hard to preserve and condense their bloodlines. Unfortunately, our restraint will not be shared by everyone. There are those who are growing very close to understanding how all this works.
My uncle, Wax thought, looking down at the book in his fingers. So far as he could tell, Edworn, the man known as Mr. Suit, was trying to breed allomancers. What would he do with hemallergy if he knew about it?
We need to stay ahead of those who might use this for ill purposes, Vendel said. We need to experiment and determine how these identity-free metal mines would work.
Doing so will be dangerous, Wax said. Mixing the powers is incredibly dangerous,
says the twin-born, Milan said.
I'm safe, Wax said, glancing at her. My powers don't compound. They're from different metals.
They may not compound, Vendel said, but they're still fascinating, Lord Waxillium. Any mixing of allomancy and ferrochemy has unanticipated effects.
What is it about you, Wax said, that makes me want to punch you even when you're saying something helpful?
None of us have been able to figure it out,
Milan said, waving for Wayne to toss her a walnut.
One of the Cosmere's great mysteries.
Now, now, Lord Ladrian, Vendel said, holding up his hands. Is that the way to speak to someone who bears your ancestor's hands?
His hands? Wax said. Are you speaking metaphorically?
No, Vendel said. Breeze did say I could have them after he died. Excellent metacarpals. I bring them out for special occasions.
Wax stood still for a moment, holding the book in his hand, trying to digest what the Chondra had just said. His ancestor, the first Lord Ladrian, Counselor of Gods, had given this creature his hands.
In a way, Wax had shaken hands with Breeze's corpse.
He stared at his glass, surprised to find it empty, and poured some more whiskey.
"This has been a very enlightening lesson," Maracy said. "But pardon, Your Holiness, you still haven't explained what you need from me."
Vendel changed the picture to one of an illustration. A man with long dark hair and a bare chest wearing a cloak that extended behind him into eternity. His arms, crossed before him, were wrapped with intricate bracers in a fanciful design. Wax recognized the iconography, if not the specific image. Rashik, the First Emperor. The Lord Ruler.
What do you know of the Bands of Mourning, Miss Combs? Vendel asked.
The Lord Ruler's metal mines, Maracy said with a shrug. Relics from mythology, like the Lady Mistborn's knives or the Lance of the Fountains.
There are four individuals, Vendel said, who, to our knowledge, have held the power of ascension. Rashik, the Survivor, the Ascendant Warrior, and Lord Harmony himself. Harmony's ascension granted him a precise and in-depth knowledge of the metallic arts. It stands to reason that the Lord Ruler gained the same information. He understood identity as a ferrochemical ability and knew the hidden metals. Indeed, he gave aluminum to his inquisitors.
Vendel flipped the image to a more detailed illustration of those arms wrapped in bands of metal.
Curiously, nobody knows exactly what happened to the Bands of Mourning. Back when the Lord Ruler fell, Tensun had not yet joined the Ascendant Warrior, and though he swears he heard them mentioned, the holes in his memory prevent him from saying how or when. The mythology surrounding the Bands is quite extensive. You can find myths about them dating back to before the Katasandra, and you can find someone telling new ones in a pub around the corner invented on the spot for your amusement. But a theme runs through them all. If you held the Lord Ruler's bracers, you supposedly gained his powers.
That's just fancy, Wax said. It's a natural thing to wish for, to make stories about. It doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't it? Vendel asked. Lore says the bands have the very power that science has only now determined is plausible to assemble.
Coincidence, Wax said. And just because he might have created something doesn't mean he did. And just because you think identity works like you say doesn't mean you're right. Besides, the bands would have been destroyed when Harmony remade the world. And that's not even considering that it would be foolish for the Lord Ruler to create weapons someone else could use against him.
Vendel clicked his machine. The image changed to another Ivanotype, this one of a mural on a wall. It depicted a room with a central dais in the shape of a truncated pyramid. Set upon a pedestal on the dais was a pair of bracers made of delicate, curling metal, shaped in spirals. Only a mural, but it did seem like it was depicting the bands of mourning.
"What is that?" Marcy asked.
"One of our brothers," Milan said, sitting up in her chair. "A Chondra named Rilur took this image."
"The bands of mourning fascinated him," Vendel said. "Rilur spent the last 2 centuries chasing them. He recently returned to Elendil bearing an Ivanotype camera in his pack and these pictures."
Vendel clicked to the next image, a picture of a large metal plate set into a wall and inscribed with a strange script. Wax narrowed his eyes.
"I don't know that language."
"Nobody does," Vendel said. "It's completely alien to us, unrelated to any Terrace, Imperial, or other route. Even the old languages in Harmony's records bear no resemblance to this script."
Wax felt a chill as the images continued. Another shot of the strange language. A statue that resembled the Lord Ruler bearing a long spear. This appeared to be covered in frost. Another shot of the mural, more detailed, which depicted bracers with many different metals twining together. Not bracers for a fairing like Wax, but bracers for a full ferrochemist. Only a mural, yes, but it was compelling.
"Rilur believed in the bands," Vendel said. "He claims to have seen them, though his camera bore no image of the actual relics. I'm inclined to trust his words."
Vendel showed another image of a different mural. It depicted a man standing atop a peak, hands raised above him, and a glowing spear hovering there, just beyond his touch. A corpse slumped at his feet. Wax went forward, walking into the stream of light until he was standing right in front of the image, looking up at the portion he wasn't blocking. The face of the man in the mosaic had eyes upturned and lips parted as if in awe at what he held. He wore the bracers on his arms. Wax turned around, but standing in the stream of light, he couldn't see anything in the room.
"You mean to tell me your brother, this Rilur, actually found the bands of mourning?"
"He found something," Vendel said.
"Where?"
"He doesn't know,"
Vendel said softly. Wax stepped out of the light, frowning. He looked from Vendel to Milan.
"What?"
he asked them.
"He's missing a spike," Milan said. "Best we could determine, he was accosted before he could return here from the mountains near the southern roughs."
"We can't get any straight answers out of him," Vendel said. "A Chondra with a missing spike. Well, they aren't quite sane any longer, as you well know."
Wax shivered, a pit of emptiness shifting inside him.
"Yes."
"So, Miss Combs," Vendel said, stepping away from his machine, "this is where you come in. Rilur is, one of our finest. Of the 3rd generation, he is an explorer, an expert at bodies, and a genius. Losing him would be a great blow to us."
We can't reproduce, Milan said. Our numbers are set. The third's like Relure. They're our parents, our exemplars, our leaders. He is precious.
We would like you to recover his spike, Vendel said, from whoever took it. This will restore his sanity and hopefully his memories.
The longer he goes without it, the bigger the holes will be, Milan said.
So perhaps you can understand our urgency, Vendel said, and why I found it prudent to interrupt Lord Ladrian even on what was obviously an important day. When Relure returned to us, he was missing an entire arm and half his chest. Though he will not, or cannot, speak of where he got these pictures, he is able to recall being attacked in New Seren. We believe someone ambushed him there on his return and stole the artifacts he had discovered.
They have his spike, Milan said, voice tense. It's still there. It has to be.
Wait, wait, Marcy said. Why not give him another spike? You've got enough of them lying around to make earrings like the one you gave Waxillium. The two Chondra looked at her as if she were mad, but Wax couldn't see why. He thought the question was an excellent one.
You are misunderstanding the nature of these spikes, Vendel all but sputtered. First, we do not have Chondra blessings lying around. The earrings you mention are crafted from old Inquisitor spikes, and have barely any potency to them. One might have been good enough for Lord Waxillium's little stunt 6 months ago, but they would hardly be enough to restore a Chondra.
Yeah, Milan said. If that worked, we'd have already used all those spikes to make new children. We can't. A Chondra blessing must be created very specifically.
We did try something akin to what you suggest, Vendel admitted. Tensoon relinquished one of his own spikes to give our fallen brother a few minutes of lucidity. It was very painful for Tensoon, and, unfortunately, accomplished nothing. Relure only screamed, begging for his spike. He spat out Tensoon's a moment later. Trying to use someone else's spikes when you don't have your own already can provoke radical changes in personality, memory, and temperament.
Lessie, Wax said, voice hoarse. She changed spikes frequently.
And each was a spike created specifically for her, Vendel said. Not one that had been used by another Chondra. And besides, would you call her particularly stable, Lord Waxillium? You must trust us on this. We have done what we can. Here, at least. Milan will be traveling to New Seren to investigate and retrieve Relure's missing spike. Miss Combs, we would like you to join her and help recover our brother's mind. We can intervene with your superiors in the constable precinct and make certain you are assigned field duty working for the government in a clandestine fashion. If you can restore Relure's spike, we will be able to find answers.
Vendel eyed Wax.
This will not be a wild hunt for some impossible artifact. All we want is our friend back. Of course, any clues you can discover regarding where he went on his quest and where he got these pictures would be appreciated. There are some people of interest in New Seren, nobility that Relure is fixated upon for reasons we can't get out of him.
Wax studied the last image for a time longer. It was tempting. Mystical artifacts were all well and good, but someone attacking and nearly killing one of the faceless immortals? That was interesting.
I'll go, Marcy said from behind him. I'll do it.
But I wouldn't mind help. Waxillium?
A part of him longed to go, escape the parties and the dances, the political engagements and business meetings. The Chondra would know that. Harmony would know that. Anger simmered deep within him at the thought. He'd hunted Lessie, and they hadn't told him.
This sounds like the perfect challenge for your skills, Marcy, he found himself saying. I doubt you need me. You are perfectly capable, and I feel a fool for having implied otherwise, even accidentally. If you do want company, however, perhaps Wayne would be willing to provide some extra protection.
I'm afraid that I, however, must... The image on the wall flickered to a shot of a city with grand waterfalls. New Saren? He'd never been there. The streets were overgrown with foliage, and people promenaded about in clothing of striped brown suits and soft white dresses.
Ah, I forgot, Vendel said. There was one other image in Relure's belongings. We discovered it last, as the others were packed carefully away to await development. We suspect this image was taken in New Saren just before the attack.
And why should I care? Wax said. It... He trailed off, feeling an icy shock as he recognized someone in the picture. He stepped back into the stream of light, pressing his hand against the white wall, trying, fruitlessly, to feel the image.
Impossible.
She stood between two men, who held to her arms tightly as if pulling her forward against her will, keeping her prisoner even in broad daylight. She had glanced over her shoulder toward the camera as the Avanotype was taken. It must be one of the new models he'd been hearing about that didn't require the subject to stand still for the image to set. The woman was in her 40s, lean but solid, with long dark hair framing a face that, despite their years apart, Wax knew very, very well. Telson, his sister.